Hello and welcome back to another episode of the It's a Crime O'Clock Somewhere podcast. This is episode 100. My sources for today's episode are Dateline season 20, episode 2, titled Strangers on a Train, Killer Couples season 16, episode 3, Oxygen.com, PostandCourier.com, and ABCNews4.com. As usual, all of my sources will be linked in today's show notes. And again, thank you for joining me on my 100th episode today. Support for the It's a Crime O'Clock Somewhere podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Their products are precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's performance package is the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off plus free worldwide shipping with the code CRIMEOCLOCK at manscaped.com. If my math is correct, that's about 14 million balls. The Performance Package 4.0 has arrived, and oh man, it is a game changer. Inside this package, you'll find their Lawn Mower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Reviver toner, Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. First off, the Lawn Mower 4.0. This trimmer is the future of grooming and, dare I say, the greatest ball trimmer ever. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawn Mower 4.0 is waterproof and also has a 4000K LED spotlight you need a more precise shave. Because this trimmer is waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess on the bathroom floor. You thought that was good, but want to take your grooming game even further to the next level? The Performance Package 4.0 also includes this Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and provides proprietary skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate nose holes. Their Crop Preserver Ball Deodorant and Crop Reviver Ball Toner will change the way you approach your hygiene routine. Trust me when I say this, fellas, your balls will thank you. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. My husband loves the boxers, and I have ended up stealing the travel bag to use for extra storage. It's time to take care of yourself, so go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with the code CRIMEOCLOCK. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code CRIMEOCLOCK at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code CRIMEOCLOCK. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
She was the love of my life, always. She was daddy's girl, debutante, and tomboy. The free spirit with fiery hair and a wide open heart.
She's a very, very kind person.
Then she vanished.
I call the police. Something is wrong.
And something was. Days passed, then months. No leads, no clues, no progress.
I thought, I'm not going to put up with this. We got to get going. We got to get moving on this.
Enter the A-Team, a band of tough guy private eyes.
This guy got something to hide.
There'd been a brief encounter with a mysterious stranger.
On the train coming home, she had met this woman.
Did that hold the answer?
She's talking about how someone has tried to assume her identity.
A chilling case of a daughter in danger.
Kate Waring was from a well-known Southern family. Kate's parents said she had them wrapped around their fingers, especially her dad. Kate was the middle child and had two brothers, Joe and Richard. They grew up in downtown Charleston. Kate was kind and compassionate, smart, and really loved animals. She made friends with everyone. But when she got older, Kate had some struggles, as we all do. Kate struggled with eating disorders and took a lot of risks in college. Kate had also confided in her parents that she had been sexually abused when she was young by someone they knew. It caused her to turn to drugs and alcohol even after trying to go to therapy. Kate moved back home to live with her parents. And during a trip with her family, Kate met a man from Moscow. She picked up the language and went to see him in Russia. She was planning to return in the summer to learn Russian studies. On June 13, 2009, Kate's dad, Tom, hadn't heard from her, which was unusual. She always at least checked in with them. They last heard from her on June 12th. He drove from their summer house to their main house to check if she was home, but she wasn't, and she left several things behind, including her medication that she needed. She wasn't home by the next day either. Kate's parents tried calling the police, jails, and hospitals, and her friends, but no one had heard from her, and there was no sign of her anywhere. The police were contacted by Kate's parents. They had learned that there were discrepancies with Kate's bank. On June 15, 2009, the bank surveillance footage caught a man named Ethan Mack waiting to cash a check signed by Kate. The check was for $4,500, which Kate really didn't have in her bank account. The signature seemed off, so the bank teller called Tom because he knew him. And then he called the police. He had never met Ethan, but Kate had been friends with him. Kate's parents also didn't know about a few people she had been seeing, but Ethan was a good friend of hers. Ethan worked at a local hotel. Ethan described himself as her protector and said he put men in their place if they messed with her. Ethan said they were more like siblings, and Kate was even the godmother of Ethan's nephew. Ethan said he was concerned about Kate when he hadn't heard from her. Ethan claimed that Kate had told him to cash that check. Ethan had loaned her money, and it was to pay him back. Ethan told the police that he was probably the last person to see her. He had been with her that weekend and dropped her off at her parents' house around 11:30 p.m. The police found text messages that seemed to confirm his story. The police also searched Ethan's home that he shared with his mom. The situation of the police speaking to him concerned him, so he called Kate's parents and left a voicemail.
Good evening, Mr. Waring. This is Ethan Mack calling.
This is the voicemail he left for the Warings after that policeman poked around his place as if he was some murder suspect.
Well, I bet you need to really check that and go find out and go see what really happened and find the person who did something to her and stop harassing me, because the only thing I ever did was try to help her and mold and money away.
A group of retired police officers became private investigators and agreed to help with the case. They were called the A-Team. Bill Capps and James Randolph began to look at the case. They went to the Waring house and searched Kate's room. Her new prescription was on her dresser and hadn't been touched. It was to treat her anxiety, depression, and insomnia. At the time she went missing, all of her texts, calls, and social media stopped. Kate had left a voicemail for a man she was seeing at 10:06 p.m. The voicemail said that someone had stolen her identity. It also said that this person had obtained some credit cards in her name. Another man she was seeing, named Howard, as you heard before, said he heard from Kate around 10:30 p.m. He said he also heard from her around midnight. Howard texted her to be careful, but she never responded. Later, her phone pinged from James Island. Kate made a call to her voicemail, which is full. The PIs believed someone else had been using her phone. Jean Fraser, a retired police officer, learned from a church friend that the police had been to Ethan's. He learned that Ethan had another place that was rented by his dad on James Island. The police hadn't searched that home. Jean joined the PI team in Kate's investigation. The police obtained Kate's phone records and learned that she had made a call from James Island late that Friday night. It was just a few miles from her parents' house. The police weren't concerned about Kate or her well-being and told her family that she had no idea if they had no idea that a crime had been committed. Kate's parents knew she wouldn't have killed herself, overdosed, or just went to travel without telling them. The day that Kate went missing, she had gotten a ride to a therapy session and went to the gym. At 8 p.m., she was seen on surveillance footage at a CVS. She was waiting on her medicine refill and bought a few other items. She then went out to dinner with Ethan and was dropped off, according to him. Kate's dad, Tom, said that Kate had told him she had a problem and may have unintentionally gotten herself in trouble. Kate wasn't specific with him, and he was concerned. Kate had been seeing a man named Howard and had an altercation with his wife at the gym. However, Howard's wife had provided any information to the police and was ruled out. She did tell the police that Howard had left the country the day before Kate went missing. Howard ended up speaking to the police once he returned from his cruise. He said he and his wife had separated already before he started seeing Kate. Howard was eventually ruled out as a suspect and had taken a polygraph. When the police wouldn't help the Warings, Tom made a call to his friend named John Rivers. Kate had now been missing for 2 months. John called a man named Andy Savage, who was one of the best attorneys in the Charleston area, and he was told to keep the police informed if he investigated this. The team presented it to the police, but they had never searched Ethan's house or re-interviewed him. Ethan also failed to tell the police that he had a girlfriend named Heather Camp, who also lived with him and was sometimes referred to as his fiance. It turns out that Kate had once had Heather over to her house. Kate and Heather had met on the train when Kate had been traveling to Washington. Kate had told her parents that Heather had her wallet stolen and didn't have any money. Kate said she was helping her. Heather had said she was a pediatric surgeon and would pay her back. Heather had also told Kate a few days later that her daughter had died in a car accident. Janice, Kate's mom, said something was just odd about Heather. She didn't appear to be grieving or was in any rush to get home. Kate had also been the one who introduced Ethan and Heather, and they started a relationship almost right away. The PIs did a background check on Heather, and they learned she had been arrested for forgeries and had been arrested in several other states. They also learned that she had been impersonating a doctor, she had been married before, and had 4 kids. Heather had also been with Kate and Ethan that Friday night at dinner, according to the bill. The PIs went to the police, but they wanted to treat the forgery from the check as a separate crime. Bobby Minter, part of the A-team, tucked a surveillance camera into a corner near the window at Ethan's home. A GPS was also attached to Ethan's car while he was at his job. While Ethan was at work, Heather was caught on surveillance sneaking over to the neighbor's house. They were also seen going to the bank a lot, and it turned out they were stealing money from the bank. The GPS on Ethan's car had also led to a few local pawn shops where they had been pawning jewelry. The landlord had reported that Ethan and Heather weren't paying their rent, so the A-team had come up with a plan before they were evicted. John Rivers agreed he would pay the rent, and the PIs also wanted handwriting samples to see who had actually forged Kate's signature, so the landlord helped by having Heather and Ethan write agreements to their rent. The handwriting expert confirmed that Heather had been the one to forge Kate's signature. The police believed that Kate could have been inside the apartment. The landlord was allowed to enter for an inspection, so he decided to go in and spray for bugs, or at least tell Ethan that's what he was doing. When they entered, Ethan was inside on the couch smoking a joint. They told him to step outside while they searched or sprayed the chemicals like they had told him they were going to do. Inside Ethan's backpack, they found Chinese currency like the ones found in Kate's room. Tom had given them to Kate as a souvenir from Hong Kong. The team put out missing persons posters of Kate everywhere they could. They put one on Ethan's windshield, but Ethan didn't respond to it. The PIs came up with a ruse to put out a bag of money where Ethan and Heather would find it. They also wanted to speak to Ethan's neighbor, Terry Williams, who had been stealing with Heather. They used the money to talk to Terry because he was behind on his rent. Heather was there, and it was clear that she and Terry were more than involved. She called Ethan and told him that the investigators were trying to get Terry to roll on them. The PIs knew that they had the right people. The Warings learned that there was a lot of missing persons cases in South Carolina that the police weren't looking into. Terry Williams said he knew that Heather and Ethan had done something to Kate. He handed them an iPod and said he believed it was Kate's. Kate had been seen with that iPod at the gym on the day she went missing, and the serial number matched to hers. All this information and evidence that was collected was handed over to the police. Heather ended up confessing to forging the check. She said Ethan had been the one who went to try to cash it. Ethan was arrested at his hotel job. The PIs told the police that they could find Heather at her job at a local gas station. Heather was also arrested and they were charged with forgery and obstruction of justice. The PI team also learned that the police were now searching Wadama Island for Kate's body, about 20 miles from Kate's home. Heather was brought out to help in finding Kate's body. The search was called off as nothing was found. At the bond hearing, Ethan had the chief public defender and his family on his side. Heather had no one on her side. Heather claimed that she had put the police through a test, which they failed because they started to berate her. She said she didn't tell them where Kate was. At the jail, Heather and Ethan could see each other and were only separated by glass partitions. Heather was trying to get Ethan's attention, and she was told that Ethan was going to roll on her. Heather finally told the police about a large oak tree. She said that Kate's body was about 5 feet off the path. It was very detailed, but nothing again was found. The police knew Heather was a pathological liar and asked her to describe something no one else knew. Heather talked about the jewelry that they had taken from Kate. Kate's jewelry was found at a local pawn shop, and her bulldog keychain was found behind the TV of Ethan and Heather's apartment. Heather had taken it from Kate's purse as a trophy. The PI team went back to the island to search for Kate. They went without the police, and Kate's remains were located. They took photos, and they called 911.
911, what's the address emergency?
Yes, ma'am. This is Robert Minter.
Okay, you need police, fire, or EMS, sir?
Police.
What's the address, hon?
Wait, there's no address. It's in the woods. We found the body of Kate Waring.
You believe you found the body of Kate Waring?
Yes. Yes, you know you did.
In the woods?
Yes.
After Bobby Minter made that call, the dispatcher can be heard notifying people.
Hey, Sarge.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for this?
No.
This guy is adamant that he found Kate Waring in the woods off of Polly Point Road.
Off of where?
Polly Point Road in Guatemala Island.
All right. Why is he adamant?
He says he knows it's her.
When the police arrived, the PIs told them they were backing off because it was their crime scene. The team was detained and put in separate cars. They weren't free to leave and seized Bill Capp's car. They wanted their statements as to everything they had done, and they were eventually released, but the car was kept until they filed an injunction. The Warings learned of the discovery. Scarlett Wilson, the solicitor, said they didn't have much evidence that Ethan and Heather did anything to Kate. Heather agreed to testify against Ethan. Ethan's lawyer said Heather was a straight-up liar and con artist. They said Heather had met Kate on the train and decided to target her. Heather had also 13 other victims. She would lie about various things like her children or her being sick. She also pretended to be a doctor or an heiress. Ethan's story had never changed, according to his lawyer. He and Kate had gone out to dinner with Heather. He said Kate had dropped her off at her parents' house. Ethan blamed Heather. Kate had told several people, including a friend in a letter, that someone had been trying to beat her, and it's believed that Kate may have been threatening to get her dad involved. Almost a year and a day after Kate was found, the trial started. Ethan was the only one on trial as Heather had taken a plea agreement. The A-team and various detectives from the Charleston police testified. The prosecution argued that Heather and Ethan killed Kate so they wouldn't be caught forging her checks. Heather told the police in her testimony that it was Ethan who had killed Kate. She said he shocked her with a taser, smothered her, drowned her in the bathtub, hit her over the head with a wine bottle, and discarded her on the island. Ethan's lawyer said he was truly in fear. The jury said they couldn't decide on a verdict for murder, and it was declared as a mistrial. He was only found guilty of obstruction of justice and forgery. Kate's family was heartbroken. Ethan's mom testified on his behalf. She said as if she felt as her son was involved, she'd turn him in. After the mistrial, Ethan's mom visited him in jail because she knew there was more to the story. On April 1st, 2011, Ethan agreed to an Alford plea and pled guilty to voluntary manslaughter in exchange for a 25-year sentence. Heather pled guilty but said she was mentally ill. Because she kept lying, she was sentenced to 39 years in prison. The PI team believed that if the police had gotten involved, they'd have a stronger case. The Charleston police believed they took the case seriously. The Warings also didn't think the police did a good job or took it seriously either. Heather claimed she liked Kate because she was funny and fell in love with Ethan when they were introduced. Heather admitted to being a con artist because that's how she learned how to survive. Heather said she stole from Kate, but that Ethan had killed her.
Husband wanted to rip her off because she had money.
But wait, why would Ethan want any harm to come to his good friend Kate?
The trouble is that Ethan never considered her a friend.
Not a friend of hers at all?
No.
Not like a sister or anything?
No. He was babysitting her, and she became a problem for him.
Heather said Kate threatened to put them in jail, which scared Ethan. She said Ethan put Kate in a suitcase, tasered her. When she stopped moving, he took a wine bottle and smashed her over the head. He then drowned her, and Heather said she got sick. She said she believed if she didn't help Ethan, he would kill her too, and she lied that and said she was pregnant to save herself. Ethan said Heather had told him so many lies. He said they moved in together and thought they were both going to work. He said Heather had told him that her family in Puerto Rico could get rid of Kate. He said Heather zipped Kate up in the suitcase and said they needed to kill her. He said Heather was the one who had done everything to Kate. Heather had convinced Ethan of so many things and manipulated him. Ethan had never had a girlfriend before, according to his lawyer, and fell for her and her lies. Kate was betrayed by one of the closest people in her life. Ethan chose love over his best friend. It's heartbreaking, but the work done by the A-team was outstanding. On the other hand, the Charleston police failed the Waring family. In the end, they received the justice they deserved for Kate. My book recommendation for this week is Thicker Than Water by Megan Collins. Summary. Julia and Sienna Larkin are sisters-in-law connected by Julia's husband and Sienna's brother Jason. More than that, the two are devoted best friends and business partners, believing that theirs is a uniquely unbreakable bond. To Sienna, her protective brother can do no wrong, and although Julia knows he's not perfect, they build a comfortable life and family together. Recently, Jason has been putting in long hours to secure a promotion at work. So when his boss is found brutally murdered, his lips sewn shut, the Larkins are shocked and unsettled, especially as local gossip swirls. A few days later, Julia and Sienna's lives are upended when Jason gets into a car accident and is placed in a medically induced coma. Worse, the police arrive with news that he's the prime suspect in the murder investigation. With Jason unable to respond and with Julia and Sienna working to clear his name, the two women find their friendship threatened for the first time. Sienna staunchly maintains her brother's innocence, but as their investigation uncovers a complicated web of secrets, Julia is less sure she's willing to defend her husband. This book kept me guessing throughout. I say that a lot about the books I read, but it really did. Julia and Sienna's once close relationship is tested when they are on opposite sides of a mystery while both trying to clear someone close to them. I liked reading how the dynamics of all the characters change as the book goes on, and I give this book a 9 out of 10. I hope you all enjoyed my 100th episode. I'd love to know what you think about this case. Thank you again to Manscaped for sponsoring today's episode. Again, use the code CRIMEO'CLOCK for 20% off plus free shipping. And please subscribe to my blog, follow me on Instagram and Twitter, email me at itscrimeoclocksummer@gmail.com, buy me a coffee, and leave me a 5-star rating and review. I'll be back next week with an all-new case and book recommendation. And remember, it's Crime O'Clock Somewhere.